All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're going deep on something pretty interesting. I mean, I think it's interesting, at least I hope you guys do, but we'll see. where digital privacy and the Fourth Amendment kind of bump up against each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Specifically when actions by private companies like Google or Facebook or whoever, might actually be considered like government searches, that would require a warrant.
Right.
And the case we're looking at to really zero in on this is United States v. Keith. This was from Massachusetts back in 2013. So a little while ago now, but still super relevant, I think. So I guess to get us started, could you just kind of lay out, why this case is so important, especially, thinking about our listeners, all you future lawyers out there.
Absolutely. I mean, this case really boils down to a question that's, I think, really at the heart of digital privacy in the age of, big tech. And that's, we all know that private companies are holding a massive, just huge amounts of data on all of us.
Oh, yeah.
And so the question is, when do their interactions with law enforcement, when does that trigger, our constitutional protections,
Yeah.
right? The Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures.
Right.
And this is, this is a question that's still, very much being worked out in the courts, right?
Yeah.
Because, the lines between, the private sector and the public sector are, kind of blurring more and more in this digital
I
age.
totally.
Yeah.
Okay, so to just to kind of set the stage here, in this particular case, this guy David Keith was charged with some pretty serious offenses, distributing and possessing child pornography. And the evidence that led to those charges, like the way it all came about is kind of, it's a winding road. And it all started with something a private company, AOL, did. So could you just kind of like walk us through how this all began?
So we got to go back in time a little bit to 2009,
Okay.
and at that time, AOL, as part of its effort, I guess, to make a safer online environment for its users,
Yeah.
think about things like parental controls and maintaining some kind of community standards.
Right.
They had this thing called the image detection and filtering process.
Okay.
And this system flagged an email that was coming from an IP address. And that IP address was later traced back to David Keith.
Okay, so hold on. Like how did AOL's system even know to flag anything? Like were they reading everyone's emails? I mean, that kind of raises some red flags right there, doesn't it? Privacy-wise.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And
Yeah.
to be clear, it's not like, they had, people sitting there reading through every email. It wasn't like that.
Right.
It was more, they were using this technique called a hash value. And so imagine like a digital fingerprint, right?
Okay.
Like a unique barcode for every digital file.
Okay.
And so even if you like change the file even a little bit, that barcode, that digital fingerprint completely changes,
Oh, wow.
right? So AOL, what they had was a database of these digital fingerprints, these hash values that were associated with, known child pornography.
Okay.
And so their system would automatically scan outgoing emails,
Yeah.
look at the attachments, look at the images in those attachments, calculate the hash values, and compare them to this database.
Wow.
And in Keith's case, bam, there was a match.
So it was like an automated digital fingerprint comparison.
Exactly, yeah.
And because they were doing this on their own, for their own reasons, just to kind of keep their platform, family friendly or whatever,
Yeah.
that's considered like a private action at that point, not something that the Fourth Amendment would apply to.
Right. Exactly. And that's a really, really important distinction to understand. Because at this point, AOL is not acting under any kind of, government directive.
Right.
This is just part of their standard operating procedure.
Okay.
And so once they got this hit, AOL, being a responsible company, what do? They report it.
Right.
They report it to the authorities.
Right.
And in this case, they reported it to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC.
Right. NCMEC. And that's not just, any regular private company, right?
Vernacular,
They have much closer relationship with the
you
government.
do.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
NCMEC is a it's a congressionally funded nonprofit organization,
Okay.
and they have this very specific mission, which is to help recover missing children and to combat child sexual exploitation.
Right.
And here's the really important part. They actually have these statutory ties to law enforcement,
Okay.
meaning like legally they are obligated to report any suspected instances of child exploitation.
Wow.
So when AOL reports this hash match to NCMEC, you know, NCMEC receives that information, they do their own review based on that, you know, digital fingerprint.
Okay.
And they confirm, yeah, this looks like child pornography.
Okay.
And they're also able to determine, you know, where this sender is located geographically.
Okay, so we've got this private company, AOL. They make this initial discovery, you know, just doing their own thing, their automated scan.
Right.
They pass that information on to NCMEC, who, you know, are getting government funding, and they have this legal duty to report.
Right.
And they review that information independently. I mean, this is where things start to get a little murky, right?
Yeah, for sure. It starts to get complicated, you know. Yeah. But before we go down that rabbit hole, mm-hmm. you know, of all the legal complexities here, there's another piece of this story that is really, really important.
Oh, right, right. That happened kind of separate from all this.
Yeah, totally separate.
Okay.
So this all happens in July of 2010, so several months after that initial discovery by AOL.
Right.
And basically, Keith takes his laptop into a Staples store up in New Hampshire to get it repaired.
Okay.
And while they're working on it, you know, an employee at Staples comes across these files on the laptop. And the final names really suggest, you know, pretty strongly that this is child pornography.
Okay.
So Staples, being a private business, mm-hmm. you know, they report this to the local police up in New Hampshire.
They see these file names and like, oh, we gotta report this.
Yeah, exactly. Suspicious activity, they call it in.
Right.
So the New Hampshire police, they get this information. They start investigating. They identify the owner of the laptop, David Keith. They go and actually interview him.
Okay.
And during that interview, Keith admits, yeah, I downloaded some, you know, illegal files onto my laptop.
Wow.
And so this is a really crucial piece of information.
Oh, okay.
Right. Because it's an independent admission of wrongdoing. And so the New Hampshire police, they share their findings with the authorities down in Massachusetts where Keith actually lives.
Right.
So now you have the Massachusetts law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
They have two separate sets of information.
Oh, okay, yeah.
They've got that NCMEC report, that whole thing that started with AOL scan.
Right.
And then they've got this whole separate thing from Staples with, you know, the laptop and Keith actually confessing to the police up in New Hampshire.
Yeah. So what do they do with all this?
So they take all this information and they use it to apply for a search warrant.
Okay.
For Keith's house in Massachusetts. And they did the warrant. This happens in September of 2010.
Okay.
And when they go and execute that search warrant, what do they find? More evidence of child pornography.
Oh, wow.
And Keith, you know, after being Mirandized, he makes more incriminating statements.
Okay. And so this is where his lawyers step in. They're like, hold on. Like, none of this is admissible.
Right. Right. Exactly. They file a motion to suppress.
Right. And they're saying this evidence from his home, his statements, you know, all of that, it should be thrown out because the initial search warrant was, you know, it was bogus. It was unconstitutional.
Yeah.
So what was the, like, the main thrust of their argument? Like, why were they saying that the warrant was unconstitutional?
So their main argument really zeroed in on NCMEC.
Okay.
Right. Remember, NCMEC, they're the ones that got the information from AOL, reviewed the file.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Keith's lawyers are arguing is that when NCMEC did that, when they looked at that file, they were essentially acting as an arm of the government.
Okay.
Like they were a government agent. And because they did that without a warrant, that was an illegal search under the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
And therefore, you know, that makes the search warrant for his house invalid because it was based on this, you know, initial, you know, illegal search, so to speak.
Right. Right. So that's really the heart of the Fourth Amendment issue here, right?
It's
like, when does a private entity like NCMEC, you know, cross that line where they're no longer just a private entity, but they become like part of the government?
Right.
You know, for purposes of, you know, constitutional protections. And I guess this is where that whole private search doctrine comes in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So the Fourth Amendment,
yeah,
at its core, it protects us against, you know, unreasonable searches and seizures that are conducted by the government.
Okay.
Generally, it's not going to apply to actions that are taken by private individuals or private entities who are just acting on their own.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the basis for this whole private search doctrine that the courts have developed.
Okay.
And so in this case, in Keith, the court looks at AOL's actions.
Right.
And they determine that, yeah, AOL was acting privately. You know, they were doing that hash matching for their own business interests, legitimate business interests.
Right.
To, you know, keep their platform safe for their users and maintain a family-friendly environment. all of that.
Right.
And there's this really important Supreme Court case, United States v. Jacobson. It's kind of a key precedent here.
Okay.
And basically what Jacobson says is that, look, if a private party conducts a search and they uncover some incriminating evidence, you know, the government can use that information.
Okay.
It's not going to be considered a violation of the Fourth Amendment as long as the government doesn't, like, expand the scope of that initial private search.
Okay.
So they're not going further than the private entity did.
Got it.
So in that case, AOL doing that automated look at the hash value, that was fine.
Okay.
But then it gets tricky when NCMEC comes in, right?
Right.
And they actually look at the content of the file that their hash value points to.
Right.
And that's where the court kind of draws the line.
Right.
And they say, look, this is different.
Okay.
You know, AOL was acting privately, but here, NCMEC, in this context, they were acting as a government agent.
Okay.
And that is a really, really big legal distinction.
Right.
And there are a few reasons why they came to that conclusion.
Okay.
So first of all, you know, NCMEC gets a lot of money from Congress.
Right.
They're congressionally funded. They're authorized by Congress to do what they do.
Okay.
And maybe even more important than that is they have this statutory obligation to report these instances of, you know, child exploitation to law enforcement.
Right.
So their whole goal, their primary objective is not some private business interest.
Right.
It is to help law enforcement.
Right.
To go after these crimes, to prevent child pornography offenses.
Okay.
And so because of all of that, the court says, you know what? When NCMEC did that, when they looked at that file without a warrant, that was potentially a violation of Keith's Fourth Amendment rights.
Okay, so they're saying NCMEC acted as a government agent, so they should have gotten a warrant.
Right.
So that means all this evidence should be thrown out, right?
You would think so, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
Okay, so what happened?
So this is where two really important exceptions to the exclusionary rule come into play.
Okay.
The independent source doctrine and the good faith exception.
Okay, all right. We got it. We got to unpack this.
Yeah, we do.
So first, independent source.
Okay, so remember that second piece of information that the police had?
Right, the laptop.
The laptop from Staples.
Right.
And that whole thing, yeah, with Keith confessing to the police up in New Hampshire.
Right.
So the court looked at that and they said, look, that's a totally independent source of probable cause to get that search warrant for Keith's house.
Okay.
Even if we, like, pretend that the information from NCMEC never existed,
yeah,
the police still had a rock solid reason to believe that Keith was involved in child pornography. Mm-hmm. They had the laptop. They had his own words.
Right.
Right. So it's like they had two separate paths that led them to the same conclusion, the same evidence.
Okay.
And so even if one path has, you know, a legal roadblock, like it's blocked off, the evidence is still okay because the other path is totally clear. Oh. Legally found.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was independent source.
Right.
Now what about good faith?
All right, so the good faith exception, what that basically says is that even if a search warrant is later found to be invalid,
mm-hmm,
for whatever reason, like some technicality, some legal issue, the evidence can still be used in court.
Okay.
If, and this is a big if the officers who got the warrant and the officers who executed the warrant, if they acted in good faith,
okay,
if they genuinely believed that the warrant was legit, it was valid at the time.
Right.
And so in this case, you know, the police were relying on information from that NCMSC cyber Dublin.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a program. It's authorized by law. It's in the statutes.
Right.
And at that time, you know, the law wasn't crystal clear that, oh, yeah, NCMSC doing this, that's definitely a government search. They need a warrant.
Right.
It wasn't settled law.
It was still kind of fuzzy.
It was fuzzy. And so the court's thinking is, like, look, the point of the exclusionary rule is to deter police misconduct.
Right.
We want to discourage the police from doing bad things.
Right.
But here, these officers, they were acting in good faith.
Right.
They were following the rules as they understood them.
Right.
And so to punish them, to throw out this evidence because of, you know, actions that NCMEC took, a third party where it wasn't even clear if what they were doing was, you know, legally problematic, that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So even though the court's like, well, yeah, maybe NCMEC should have gotten a warrant.
Right.
They're still saying, look, the cops acted in good faith and there was this whole other, you know, set of evidence that, you know, would have justified the warrant anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, this whole case really shows just how complicated, how messy it can be to try to apply these Fourth Amendment rules to, you know, the digital world that we're all living in now.
Totally. I mean, it's a whole different ballgame, right?
Yeah. 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 And so I guess to kind of help us make sense of this, the court in Keith referenced a three-factor test that courts use, you know, to determine if a private entity is basically acting as the government.
Right.
Like a government agent for Fourth Amendment purposes.
Yeah.
So could you just kind of walk us through those three factors? What are the courts looking at here?
All right. So the first factor is, did the government instigate or participate in the search?
Okay.
Right. So in Keith, you know, while the government didn't tell AOL to go do that initial scan,
right,
you could argue that they kind of set the stage for NCMEC to do their review, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're the ones funding them, and they gave them this very specific mandate. You know, you got to report any suspicion of child exploitation.
Right.
So there's that. The second factor is, was the primary purpose of that private entity to assist law enforcement?
Okay.
And in Keith, the court says, look, it's pretty clear. The whole reason NCMEC exists is to help law enforcement fight child exploitation.
Right.
You know, that's their main gig. But with AOL, you know, they were just doing their own thing.
Right.
Their primary concern was running their business and keeping their platform safe for their users.
Okay.
And then the third factor is, did the government control the search?
Okay.
And while it's true that the government didn't, like, tell NCMEC exactly how to go about reviewing that file, you know, they did give them the money. They gave them the marching orders.
Right.
They made it very clear what they expected them to do.
Right, right.
And that created, you know, a significant amount of, like, governmental influence.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So basically, running it through that three-factor test, the court saying, you know, NCMEC looks a lot more like a government agent here in this particular situation than AOL did.
Exactly.
Okay. So for our listeners out there, you know, the future legal eagles, what are, like, the key takeaways from this whole United States v. Keith saga? What do they really need to walk away with?
So I think there are, like, three really big things to keep in mind.
Okay.
Number one, you got to understand the legal difference between those broad automated actions that private companies take, like that initial hash matching that AOL did, versus, you know, a more focused, targeted review and analysis than an entity like NCMEC might do.
Okay.
You know, NCMEC, they have those specific ties to law enforcement.
Right.
And the courts are going to look at that. They're going to look at how involved the government is, and they're going to look at the primary purpose of the entity doing the searching.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two is, this case really illustrates how important that independent source doctrine is.
Okay.
Because even if some of the initial information, you know, was maybe obtained in a way that's a little questionable.
Right.
If there's another source of evidence that's totally independent and that's solid, that's enough to justify the search.
Right.
The evidence is still going to be admissible.
Okay.
And then the third takeaway is this whole good faith exception. Because even if there are some constitutional concerns about how the police got the information, if they were acting in good faith, if they were following the rules as they understood them.
Right.
That evidence can still be used.
Okay.
And so it's all about whether the police acted reasonably based on what the law was at the time.
Right.
Not about punishing them for something that, you know, a third party like NCMEC did, where it wasn't even clear if what they were doing was, you know, over the line or not.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, this whole case, this whole issue, it's like this balancing act, right?
It is.
Between protecting people's privacy and, you know, letting law enforcement do their job and keep people safe.
It is. It's this constant tension, right?
Yeah.
And
it
just keeps getting more and more complicated as technology keeps evolving.
Right.
And as these lines between, you know, private companies and the government,
yeah,
they get blurrier and blurrier.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really the big question for all of us, and especially, you know, for our listeners out there,
yeah,
as you guys are, you know, going into the legal world,
yeah,
you know, technology is just advancing so fast.
Mm.
And, you know, the ways that private companies and the government interact, it's changing all the time.
Right.
And so how do we make sure that our legal system, you know, our laws are keeping up with all of that?
Right. Yeah. How do we protect people's privacy?
Yeah.
Without tying law enforcement's hands.
Right. I mean, that's a huge question.
The big one.
A big one. Well, we didn't solve it today, but
we laid out the battlefield.
Yeah, we laid out the battlefield. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the deep dive. We'll see you next time.